My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valenti, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in. This is the latest edition of the Character Concerns podcast. My name is Christian Osero, joined as always by my guy, Jay Binkley. We just finished. Was that week eight? It was week eight of the college football season.
You know what, Chris? Every time you say that, I sit here and think, where the hell is this season going?
It's going fast.
It drives me nuts, man. You know how long and how many days I sat there staring at the wall, watching time tick by, going out to Barnes & Noble and getting my college football magazine.
You only did that once.
I do it once a year.
You do it once.
I do it usually.
That's not a frequent thing you do.
Well, the first week of June, I still buy them. I know everybody does things online. They say, why are you going out and buying magazines? You're an idiot, whatever. Yeah. So, okay. First of all, what are you going to read on the toilet? Well,
you have a phone.
I know, yeah.
Get an iPad.
I know.
Use your laptop if you really need to, but you can just get an iPad.
But anyway, it's an annual tradition with me. It's like a holiday tradition.
Are you also the person that goes to Evergy and pays your light bill?
No, hell no.
Do you go to the insurance agency and pay your insurance bill?
No, this isn't. But I like a hard copy because when I'm watching college football, I like to have this magazine. Just look at the stats from last year, schedules. I look a lot of stuff up on my phone, obviously. I spend a lot of time on the old, voice to voice.
Yeah, you are definitely a voice to text voice searching.
Well, what kills me now is the eligibility. Because with that free COVID year, we're finally starting to get out of there. Because, that guys have been playing 4 years.
There's still a few guys, though.
Hell, Cam Rising in Utah, if he medically redshirts this year, well, it looks like he's going to get one. That'd be 7 years. He's going to play, and also it kind of gives me a roadmap for which college quarterback transferred because there's so many transferring now. But I spend that one day, I go get the college football previews, and then I lose myself in them for a while, and I can't wait for week zero in college football. And then you blink, and all of a sudden, USC's out of it basically now with two losses, which we did call on the show.
Yeah,
there's no defense that's played there. Every one of their stars
and their offense the last few weeks is kind of has not really shown up the way that they had early in the year.
If there's one team that's positioning itself for the draft, it's USC.
Yeah,
because for USC, and I know it's a team sport and you got to win team games, but this team's not going to the playoffs now. The season is lost. But draft stock can be won and lost for this football team in particular. For how they finish the rest of the year. And here's the thing, too. It's crucial for NFL teams with a lot of these games we're talking about. Like, how do guys perform when the chips are down? Like, if your team's not going anywhere, do you evaluate the prospects? Like, you learn a lot about a player when their team's got like 3-4 losses or whatever, and you find out how if they show up to play.
Right.
Because you may need that, because guess what? You might draft them into a terrible team in the National Football League. You want a guy when the chips are down to still compete.
But so anyway, we'll talk more about the mess that's kind of happened in a USC and how that applies to Caleb Williams, because things are very much changing for him right now. But I want to talk first, starting with the Chiefs. And the Chiefs have, there's been a little bit of a tumultuous time as far as the receiving core goes. We have talked about this extensively on this show, about how priority number one for the Chiefs has to be find yourself a new number one receiver, because Travis Kelce is not going to play forever. I mean, I don't know if you've been watching him on the sidelines and whatnot during games the last couple years or so, but like, while he still is playing like he's well, you know, he's in his prime and he's a well-oiled machine, at some point you can just see like, okay, he ain't gonna be able to do this forever. And you could see him walking on the sidelines and he's hurting. Yeah. You know, his body hurts. He's very, I mean, football's a painful game anyways, but like, I mean, you know those commercials with LeBron James and Father Time last year? Like, Father Time gonna try to come after Travis Kelce next.
No, it does. I peed on every post-game show with the Chiefs, and we were talking about last night. I was like, here's the one thing with the receiver. He's like, we're fine with the receivers, Jake. Look how he's spreading the ball around. I said, that's great and all, but 179 yards of Mahomes, over 400 yards passing, what's the Travis Kelce?
Yeah.
So you take him out of the equation, what are you going to do? Like, who's going to get those yards for you in that situation? So it is a concern. I counted 3 drops on the game. Just things you can't have that could have moved first downs. Rashee Rice had dropped there, or it had fallen down, slipped down. Not really his fault, but it slipped down on a route.
Yeah.
Where Mahomes had kind of overthrown it. There's just little things like that. And, of course, what Clyde did in the end zone, dropping the ball. But there's just the little things. And, again, I'm being nitpicky on a 6-1 team. But they put the expectations out there.
Right.
Where we expect great things from them. I like to see Mahomes' job become easier. It's why that you know that I've been clamoring for a wide receiver in the draft the last couple of years, and especially this past year, like go out and get the receiver. It's why I was saying Rashee Rice has more pressure on him, I felt, than Sky Moore did in his rookie year, because Rashee Rice is counted on by this team. We're now looking at him and seeing how good he is, and this guy's now a fixture that you're counting on. If anything happened to Travis or whatever, you're going to Rashee Rice more. But there's more pressure on this year because there's more expectations, because he's a better player right now than Sky Moore. And I felt this with him because they didn't go out and get anybody in free agency. I mean, unless Richie James, but he's hurt, whatever, he hadn't done anything for this team. But Rashee Rice was going to be counted on because it was him and Wanya Morris. That was the only two offensive guys. And, of course, Wanya's on the offensive line. You lose Juju, you brought in your big addition, you brought in was Rashee Rice. Therefore, that's where the pressure is, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I my thing is this. They didn't think he would do this early. Otherwise, they would have put him in there from the very get-go.
Like, I think when they got to St. Joe, but they realized they had to get that production from
him. Yeah, but they never thought that they had to get that production from him, because they thought that they were going to get that from Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore. This is a move of necessity now.
That was the wishful thinking.
Yeah, but they very clearly were wishfully thinking that they were going to get
Rashee
that kind
Rice
of production
is
from
reality thinking. Over wishful thinking.
But that's the thing, though, is like there was no reality because we didn't know what he was going to bring to the
team.
Chris,
I wish I dated a supermodel, but the reality is I'm not.
Yeah, but my point, though, is that there was no reality where they believed that Rashee Rice was going to be that guy. Otherwise, they would have put him in
there
from jump.
Because we're 7 weeks into the season, yeah. Chris. You and I talk about 2 and 3 weeks in, you kind of – it's like baseball, like a baseball manager, yeah. Where – Hey, Ned, who's your 6th-inning guy? Who's your 7th? I don't know yet, Jay. I don't know yet. Give me a month. Give me a month into the season. It's understandable. Who wants to take the ball in the 6th inning, 7th inning, and 8th inning? And I felt different receivers were going to kind of earn that trust of Mahomes, earn that trust of Matt Nagy, earn that trust of Andy Reid. And Rashee Rice, as we see the snap counts accumulating, they're still far lower than I'd like to see.
Right.
I'd still like to see him in the 80% range of snap counts. We've seen him at 51% against the Bears. Marquez Valdes-Scantling led the way this last game. But if I'm going to see snap counts from receivers, you want production from the guy who leads with the most snaps. You want production out of that player.
And certainly now, because he's their leading wide receiver. He's leading the team for wide receivers in catches and yards. So I think at this point now he's very much earned a higher share of those snaps. I do believe, though, that they never thought that they were going to get that kind of production from him this year. I don't believe that they thought he was ever going to get to this level. And the thing is it's a great surprise because, again, they were counting on Sky Moore and they were counting on Kadarius Toney to come in and be their top two wide receivers.
Really expect him. The snap count last night for wide receivers, MVS 47, Sky Moore 41, Rashee Rice 40. That needs to flip-flop. Honestly, you need Rashee Rice to lead in snaps.
I mean, to be honest, I think he should be on the field.
Kadarius Toney 13. Justin Ross had 17.
I think at this point now, Rashee should be on the field every play. Every play, unless they're subbing him out for a little bit to give him a little rest, get someone else some reps. You know, they decide they're going to go like 12 personnel and, you know, they sub him out for whatever reason. I'm fine with that. But I think he should be the top wide receiver on the depth chart.
He's starting to show that yards after catch. You're starting to see why the Chiefs drafted him.
Yeah.
Because the Chiefs had the choice. And he was the guy. When you think about the world champions, they had one receiver they took in the draft. Rashee Rice.
Yeah, but they also were, again.
He was picked for a reason.
But let's also put context to that. They thought they traded for a number one wide receiver in Kadarius Toney last year. They moved a third round pick to go get Kadarius, who's a former first round pick. And they used the second round pick the year before on Sky Moore. So they very clearly were looking at those two guys at the very top of their depth chart for a wide receiver. And those two have not panned out. Sky Moore has had way more opportunities and is not produced at the level that Rashee has. And you look at Kadarius can't even stay healthy, let alone produce when he's on the field because he's not on the field enough.
So. Here's the snap counts for Rashee Rice starting with Detroit. 31%, 18%, 51% against the Bears. Again, they had other guys because there's a blowout game, so you kind of got to throw that one out the window. Then 46%, 30%. Last week against the Broncos, he jumps up to 49%. And then we hit the high water mark yesterday. 59% of the snaps, Rashee Rice was out there. Obviously, you take baby steps. Let's move that 59% at least to 79% against the Broncos this week.
Yeah, I don't think this is a baby step thing anymore. I think at this point now, he's shown what he can do with the little volume he's been getting.
Yeah.
Now you have to be like, okay, let's put you in this position. If you succeed, great. If you don't, you know, we'll reevaluate. But I think he's earned the opportunity to get the kind of volume that a number one wide receiver would get in this offense. And you see what happens. Like I understand Andy doesn't want to put people in positions where they're not ready for it. I think Rashee has shown that he's ready for this position. And I think the more that they stifle him, I think the worse the more of a disservice you're doing to him, because he's earned the right to be that guy. Like, he has been the most consistent receiver that they've had on their roster aside from Justin Watson, like by far. And even with Justin Watson's not a high volume target. He's a guy, you get him a couple catches a game, big plays, you're happy with him. Oh, great. You know, Justin got his little cameo in the game. But Rashee's a guy you could target 10 times and you can trust that he'll have an impact with those 10 targets. So I think if, for now, he should be the number one. The question becomes, do they still need to go after a number one type, or at this point now, is it supplementing?
Well, there's a couple things for Rashee Rice. Obviously, the separation from his stats compared to wide receiver number two at SMU last year from 97 catches down to 38. But also, the comparisons with Sammy Watkins. Threw it out there on draft night. This guy kind of reminds me of Sammy Watkins. The Chiefs have coveted that Sammy Watkins type. And then, lo and behold, in training camp, you have Mahomes make the reference to Sammy Watkins when talking about Rashee Rice. Rashee Rice was asked about it. It was kind of funny when he was asked about it, because he had asked, who said that? Somebody asked him in the media, do you like Sammy Watkins? And he goes, who said that? And they go, Pat. He goes, oh, Pat said that. Okay. I agree. But that's what he kind of reminds me of him. So I know the Chiefs have really coveted that spot.
Yeah, my thing, though, was like, are they aggressive at getting another big-time playmaker? Are they looking to supplement? Or are they looking to, hey, we want another guy with number one potential? Because I still think they should very much try to get another number one capable wide receiver.
And you're not going to have to move four.
No, it's a quarterback. Yeah, that, and it's a loaded draft class for wide receivers anyway.
If you just get in a 19 or 20, which is in a
19 or 20, you don't even need to do that. Like, I think you could probably move up into like the mid teens. I mean,
we'll
the mid 20s.
See if the board falls. See what happens to the board.
But I think mid 20, because I don't, like, even if there's a run on wide receivers like there was 2 years ago, where you saw all the really good ones, the Jameson Williams, the Jahan Dotsons, Olave, Garrett Wilson, guys like that go in the teens, you know, in between like 10 and 15. You had like four wide receivers go. Even if you see that, there's still so many talented wide receivers. Like, wide receivers 5 through 10 might end up being better than wide receivers 1 through 5 this past year, this year in this year's draft.
That was my whole theme.
That's how loaded this draft
was. That was my whole theme, that we could see better receivers in the second
five. Like, 5 through 10 might end up being better than 1 through 5 this past draft. That's how talented this wide receiver draft is, for next year.
Size and speed. We keep talking about it.
So I just feel like the Chiefs would be smart to go get another number one type. Go get a Romo Dunze if he's there. Go get a Keon Coleman if he's there. Keon Coleman might be my favorite guy that could be available for the Chiefs.
A Malik Nabers, you can think it way.
I don't think Nabers they'd have to trade up for. Like, Nabers is going to be the second receiver. Yeah, you're going to trade.
But even like a Brian Smith at LSU or somebody like that.
Yeah, or Brian Thomas.
Yeah.
You could go, and I think Brian Thomas Jr. might actually be in their range where they're sitting at late first. He might actually be in their range if they want to go get him. So
Xavier Texas, a couple of them, Xavier Ward,
Xavier Weaver Mitchell, as well. Yeah. Those are also guys that could go. There's a lot of really good wide receivers in this draft class, and I think that the Chiefs should very much prioritize trying to get another number one guy, because all these teams are overloading their teams with wide receiver talent. Chiefs got to do the same thing too, especially if and when we see that regression from Travis Kelce. Another thing that was really interesting to me was the fact, and this might not seem like a massive detail here, but Wan'Dale Morris dressed for yesterday's game. He has been inactive all season long. He's been watching the games in street clothes. In yesterday's game, I remember walking into the locker room at half, and he was in pads. I was like, oh, Wan'Dale dressed. Okay, that tells me that they feel comfortable enough that if he needed to play, he could play. And he did at the beginning of the second half. He got one snap in the game. Now, again, one snap. But this is a rookie left tackle, a guy who was a right tackle when he was at Oklahoma. And they bring him in, immediately make him a left tackle. He was running with the twos. There was a learning curve. But now they feel comfortable enough to put him in the position to be a potential guy who can plug and play at left tackle.
Yeah, because Donovan Smith got right back in the game, but it is interesting, and I thought it was interesting they throw Wan'Dale in there, because I was like, okay, that's big time stuff for this guy, just down dressing.
He's a rookie.
Getting thrown, it's that versatility. He can play both sides. Andy Reid absolutely loves that.
He loves those swing tackles.
With a guy like Wan'Dale Morris, and again, one of two offensive guys selected by the Chiefs and Rashee Rice, we was talking about Wan'Dale Morris, but I thought that was a big step for the Chiefs to put him in the game to protect the blind side of their $500 million quarterback.
It tells me that they are starting to build some trust with him. And I think now we can kind of see what the vision is for that position. Donovan Smith is a stopgap left tackle, which I think we figured that. But I think we thought the idea
turns out to be a really good move.
Yeah, it's a really good move. I think the thing we thought was Jawan Taylor comes in, he's the starting right tackle. I think they saw early on he's not a starting right tackle. He's not a starting left tackle. They thought he was going to be left tackle. They realized very quickly he's a right tackle. That's his position. That's what he's best at. We got to keep him there. And so their other plan was, let's do the thing that we were hoping we could do with Darian Kennard last year, which is let's draft this guy and let's turn him into a tackle. Let's turn him into a starting tackle. It didn't work out. Darian Kennard, not an NFL tackle. He's probably a guard at best. And they were able to go get a guy in Wan'Dale that had all the measurables, that had all of the physical attributes you like. He just needs to develop the skill, develop the talent, you know, develop the ability to play that position. And I think now they're starting to feel comfortable with him being in that role. because now they're dressing him and they put him in for a play. And I honestly think if Donovan Smith couldn't have gone back in there in that second half, Wanye would have played that entire second half at left tackle.
It was interesting because Kendre Coburn Stacks from Texas.
He got let go.
We saw him dressed one time.
One time.
Ended up, he's now a member of the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, he's on their practice squad now, which is so kind of
sad. And I would say, well, it's a strategic pick. They want to beat the Chiefs, so you bring in a former Chief. But the Broncos are in a position to toy with the Chiefs for the division.
They're not a team like that, no.
I look at that. But, yes, Keandre Coburn, one of those guys, too, that wasn't getting his chance, did get a chance to dress earlier this season, a sixth-round pick this past year, now a member of the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, and so I think we're starting to see the vision now from Andy and Veach, which is, okay, we like what this kid's doing. We like what he's showing. We think we've got our left tackle. If Wanye is indeed the left tackle of the future for the Chiefs, that makes next year's draft so much easier. Because, again, I think we're thinking they got to do something about that left tackle spot. It's one of the positions we've brought up here on this podcast. You got to figure out left tackle because Donovan Smith ain't long for this team. He is not very good. Sometimes watching him play tackle is like watching someone get their teeth pulled.
We've seen more second and third round picks pan out at left tackle or right tackle.
Right.
The traditional thinking is you have to get him to the top 15, like an edge rusher to get
traditional, but we've seen plenty of them not.
Plenty of second and third rounders.
Come out of the first round.
And again, that would have been plentiful for the Chiefs to get a tackle at the end of the first
round. Another interesting thing I've noticed is that a lot of those tackles, remember those tackles from 2021 that we saw all the, actually it was 2020.
Oh, Liam Eichenberg.
They're all moving guard. They're all guard. Eichenberg played center last night for the Dolphins against the Eagles. He was only playing center because their starting center got hurt. So he was in there playing center for them, and he's not really been
He was
that
mocked
great.
To the Chiefs in several mocks.
He was in there several mocks. Sam Cosmi, another guy. Sam Cosme's been terrible.
Most of these guys moved the guard.
I was watching that Commanders and Giants game on Red Zone. Cosme's not good. And this is a guy that got pretty immediately moved into. He was a starting right tackle for the Commanders, and then very quickly was moved inside the guard.
That's going to be looked upon as one of those wild drafts because there was no combine at all.
No.
Medicals were just coming out the day of the draft. Zach Wilson was part of that draft as well. I think we're going to look back at it because these guys, you know, they didn't play against non-conference opponents. They didn't have that. It was just a weird year where games were getting canceled mid-season, so I'm kind of curious. That was the most impressive things for the Chiefs, though, is they went into St. Joe with 21 and 22 draft picks still on the roster, and that includes people from that COVID draft where there was no combine set up. That was an impressive draft for the Chiefs because they didn't make a lot of mistakes.
It's crazy how they dodged a lot of bullets at tackle because we could be looking at them having a guy that they drafted to be their starting left tackle, and he's getting whooped regularly, so much so that the Chiefs have to put even more help than they normally do for their tackles. Now, all of a sudden, Noah Gray's going to have to line up on the left side of the line so he can help Chip. Now, all of a sudden, you're...
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Whoever your running back is in there, whether it's Pacheco or Jett, they're in there having to chip there so they can help out that left tackle that can't play. There's a lot of things that could have come out of that would be a lot of negative.
It shows smartness by the Chiefs front office. I don't know if that's a word, smartness.
But I don't think that's a word.
Whatever, we'll just use it for this podcast. But anyway, the front office in scouting, because that was the Orlando Brown year. That was, all right, we don't see anybody right in the draft we want. Let's go get Orlando Brown. So love or hate him, Orlando Brown, the Chiefs did not have a choice, but they got a starting left tackle.
I mean, they had a choice. They just didn't have a lot of great options. And he was really kind of the best option at the time because he was a guy that had shown that he can play left tackle at the NFL level, where you look at these guys like Cosme and Eichenberg and guys like that, and it's like they don't even look – they're not even NFL tackles.
That was the 2021
draft. It was the 21 draft. They haven't even shown that they can even play at the tackle
Tevin
spot.
Tevin Jenkins was part of that team.
Tevin Jenkins was another
round
one. I think he got moved into guard as well because he played right tackle. He held out longer than Cosme and Eichenberg did. But
Rashawn Slater, Slater
guard now? Is he? No, he's still right tackle.
He played for the Alex Leatherwood.
Leatherwood got overdrafted.
Yeah, Alex Leatherwood first round. We thought we called that night, but now Alex Leatherwood.
That was a terrible pick.
With the Cleveland Browns practice squad.
Yeah, he
bounced from the Raiders to the Bears. He was just with the Raiders 1 year, and that was a first round pick.
Right, and he was with them for two, I think.
No, just 1 year.
Was it just 1 year?
Yeah, 1 year. He was the Allen Trophy winner.
Yes.
But that's why the Chiefs called the Ravens about Orlando Brown. They gave him to him. And they gave him pick 58, which turned in to Nick Bolton.
Because he was not, like, we knew before draft season started, he's going to be a guard in the NFL. He's not going to be a tackle. Because he doesn't have the athletic profile. He doesn't have the feet for it. He doesn't have the technique. Like, it's just not who he is. And then they put him in a position where he was set up to fail. And look at him now. So I want to finish our main topics here talking about the Caleb Williams situation. Caleb Williams hasn't been great the last 3 weeks. He has not looked quite the same, this invincible escape artist in the pocket making these impossible, crazy-ass throws. He has not looked like that. And, you know, there was a time where it was for sure he was the next superstar quarterback to come out of college and play in the NFL. And I'm not saying that, like, his ability to be the number one overall pick is being drastically affected by his play right now. I still think he's going to be the top pick in the draft unless he just completely melts down. But, you know, if you look at his game this past week, 24 of 34 for 56 yards, no touchdowns, nothing, no picks, nothing. Just thrown for a bunch of yards. They went out and they got smacked by Utah. Wasn't even close. And you watch his performance in that game, and you just get the
that
feeling.
Game was close.
Oh, well, actually, no, it was close.
Field goal.
But, like, that was one of those games where, like,
it shouldn't have been close.
It was a game where it shouldn't have been close, but I never really felt like USC was really in control.
I didn't either, Chris. And the one thing, you're right, he's got three touchdown passes in the last, no, excuse me, he's got two touchdown passes in the last 3 weeks.
And he still leads college football in touchdown
passes. Still at 70.6% completion, but he's at 256, then 199, then 219. But the bottom line is, he was seen, he actually drew Patrick Mahomes comparison.
He did. From, like, I remember Nick Wright has been at the forefront of that. A lot of people did.
Like, we haven't seen that with any other quarterbacks. And this is a great quarterback draft class, but you haven't seen the Mahomes comparisons except for Caleb. Caleb has them.
Yeah. Which I think was unfair. I think it's unfair. I don't think you should be comparing anybody to Mahomes because, again, generational quarterback. It's like saying any pocket passing quarterback is Tom Brady. It's a terrible, terrible comparison. But I feel like the hype for Caleb has kind of, it might actually now be working against him, because now that he is not playing that great, everyone's like, oh, he's a fraud.
Yeah, they're saying it, but he's got a Heisman under his belt. I will say this. And last year, I was a proponent of Stetson Bennett. It was funny because the Heisman Trophy candidates, Caleb Williams wins the Heisman, but he was the only one not in the playoffs.
Right.
Out of the quarterbacks that were there. He lost to Utah twice last year.
He did.
And lost to him this year. He's lost the last three times to Utah. He's a generational talent, though. I still think he's a top pick in the draft. But I want to see how he performs. And the NFL teams are going to be watching him. How is Caleb Williams going to respond
right
now to just the ultimate adversity, not having a defense? Because he's got to carry this team. That's how Patrick Mahomes, if he wants to be compared to Mahomes, carry your team with a crappy defense.
I hope he doesn't want to be compared to Mahomes.
Because Patrick Mahomes' defense, there's 133 teams in Division I now. There was 128 when Mahomes played. His scoring defense was ranked 128th, dead last in the nation. Mahomes had to score a touchdown every time he's on the field. Show me that moxie. And then Emmanuel Acho that's out there that is on College Football postgame shows.
Yeah. He's doing Fox Sports, I believe.
Yeah, he said, he paraphrased here, but basically, questioning why play the rest of the year. You're not going to make the playoffs. You don't want to get hurt. Here's the one thing you got to remember. He's still upwards of about $4 million in nil money, name, image, and likeness money.
Yeah, he's going to miss out on that.
But I think it's important for him to showcase himself. And again, this is why I think USC is a team building for the NFL draft now at this point.
Yeah.
To see how you respond when the chips are down and the expectations are low. How are these guys going to go out and perform each and every week? And it's up to Caleb. Because again, Caleb didn't have a great game, but he still was at almost 71% completion in that game. How were you going to perform? Because his defense is terrible.
Yeah. And we talked about that week zero. Like, they're terrible. They gave up, like, over 30 points
to
San Jose State.
But they were going to fall on their face.
But we knew that team was probably not going to be up there with the Ohio States and the Michigans and the Georgias.
And Colorado kind of spotlighted that second half.
Exactly. They started coming back, and they made it a one-score game at the end. I agree with you on him not sitting out. I don't think, like, if he wants to sit out the bowl game, who cares about that? But if you decide you're going to sit out in mid-October, what does that say about your character as a leader? Because, again, this is a quarterback.
And what time he's going to play is if they were in the playoffs.
Right. This is not a offensive lineman. This is not a DB. This is not a running back. This is a quarterback. This is the leader of the offense. This is the guy that you want setting the tone. And I don't think teams are going to want a guy who is deciding that he's going to preserve himself so that he can make money. He can make more money. He can, like, make sure he preserves his draft stock.
You need a leader of a team, man. And I think
you need a guy that's willing to put it all out there for the team.
And I think we're starting to see with Mahomes and the characteristics of what makes a good quarterback. And again, the team has to like you. And I've always thought that they have to run through a wall for you.
Yeah.
Mahomes plays video games with his teammates. He has his teammates to his place down in Texas.
He's also down.
They like him. You have to like your starting quarterback. Like Justin Herbert, he always had some leadership knocks on him when he came in. He's got more losses since of any active starting quarterback since the league. And his draft profile was needs the wild play. Very good arm, very strong, needs the wild play. But people were questioning leadership with Herbert. That's very important because you can have a golden arm, but he seems like a likable guy. I don't know about the intangibles, but like a Josh Allen, a Mahomes, a Burrow, guys that the teammates absolutely love playing for that guy. There's no doubt they're quarterback number one. That's what teams are going to look for. You don't want a prima donna in that position. You don't want to be picking 1-1 in the draft and have a prima donna that your other teammates on that team are going to resent. No. He's got to be one of the dudes, man. Joe Montana, when he was with the Chiefs, he used to take the linemen when they had training camp up River Falls out for beers. At Bo's in mind. That's being one of the dudes, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's a position that has
teasing Neil Smith and taking his bat when he first got with the Chiefs. That's being a dude.
It's a position that requires you to have to relate with your teammates more than the average position. Because that position has kind of become a very highly protected position with the way that the rules are stated, with the amount of money those guys are making. So you can't be the guy that thinks you're better than everyone else. I think that's one of the things that hurt the Broncos last year and kind of hurts them still now, is the fact that Russ kind of carries himself like he's better than everyone else. So I think that's something that is very important, and I don't want Caleb to go down that route, because if he does, the chances of him winning wherever he gets drafted to are very, very low, because you do got to get the players to respect you as a man, and you got to get them to respect you as a player. And if they respect your game but they don't respect who you are, it's going to be hard for them to want to go out there and do it, because they're like, hey, he's going to get paid regardless of what happens. And then, you know, there's going to be some sacrifices, and maybe that sacrifice will be.
And after the game, he's going to leave early. He's not going to sit there and sign the autograph. Because Mahomes, everything you hear, he signs. Like, players come to him because they all want him to sign things, too, for their family and everything. He does. Like, he just does. It's just being a dude, man.
So getting on to our weekly prospect recap, starting out, J.J. McCarthy, quarterback at Michigan, 21 of 27 for 287 yards, 4 touchdowns. He's not this gunslinger a la, you know, Michael Penix or Caleb Williams, but he's a very efficient passer that I could see. I mean, I think if we're going to see a comparison thrown out there, it's going to be like a Kirk Cousins type comparison for a guy like him. And I kind of like the same way we saw with like Kenny Pickett a couple years ago. I think that we're going to see McCarthy probably slated as that fourth or fifth quarterback in this draft class. And I could see some team sitting there in the middle of the first round, late first round, looking at him and they're like, okay, this guy's played with talent. This guy has played with a very heavy running system, because he's got Corum, he's got Edwards. So let's put him in here. We're going to be run heavy anyways. We're going to run a lot of play action. And we got a guy who's going to be able to do that here. I mean, don't be shocked. Even though they've done it, they've taken a quarterback the last couple of years, don't be shocked that the Titans decide to go take a guy like J.J. McCarthy.
I just like his all-around game. It's why I've had him. We started doing the Heisman early on. It's why I had him up there at 2 and 3.
Right.
Right now, as we sit, he's the Heisman favorite. J.J. McCarthy. Like, he is close. I mean, he was like 7th
I think that'll change, but yeah.
The thing. I hope teams aren't going to knock him because of the scandal going on about scouting teams. Michigan, you know, had a guy that was going out to all these
games. I don't think anybody's going to care about that.
Well, people have really been following this deal.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone's going to care about that.
I hope
him.
Not. And the guy, by the way, the news just came out today. The guy that was going around all these games, he had a ticket on each side,
right,
looking right at the bench at Penn State, Ohio State. He did not go to that game, but he had a ticket on the Penn State side, the Ohio State. He was going to go to both.
He's going to go both and get them signed.
But I hope J.J. McCarthy doesn't get knocked by this. Like, yeah, he knows all the signs for the other team.
I don't think that's going
to. He didn't have time to think about
that. Because first and foremost, if we're going to be real about this, teams have been stealing signs for years. Like,
it's not a secret. It's not a secret. Bounty Gate came out with the Saints. Like, yeah. Ooh,
people have been. Everybody doing bounties for
everybody
years.
Does bounty gates.
Bounty's
man.
Not new.
The Saints did an elaborate. Greg Williams had an elaborate spreadsheet for it, but other teams did bounties.
It was more scientific with the Saints. But like, I remember hearing people in my high school locker room talk about injuring Josh Freeman when he was playing at Grandview. It's just how it is. This is just part of football, man. So like, that's the reason why I'm not so caught up in the sign stealing thing.
Well, Belichick is considered the greatest ever, and the Patriots are no stranger doing crap like this.
Bill Cowher openly talked about how they were stealing. Hey, he was trying to steal.
If there
signs
wasn't teams
too.
Doing it, then why does every offensive coordinator have the play sheet buried in their head, with their head buried behind?
Yeah, they're
it.
Covering their mouths because they know people are trying to read lips on the other side.
Yeah. It's why you have those silly signs now, like Wendy's or whatever. They're like the signs, signals. The teams change them up all the time.
Exactly. Like, dude, people have been stealing signs for decades now. Like,
I just hope they don't knock McCarthy.
Maybe like media people will, because they don't know how much that's in play. But like, nobody in an NFL organization is going to hold that against JJ.
Yeah.
Because they know the game. Moving on to Ohio State wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr., who this past Saturday looked like the top receiver in this draft class. 11 catches, 162 yards, and a touchdown against Penn State. He's just so solid. He's not like this. He's not like Odell Beckham Jr. was, or Jamar Chase was, or Justin Jefferson when they were in college, where like they were just these athletic specimens who. Every time they touch the ball, it's electric. The thing with him is he's just so like his dad. It's actually crazy to think about. It's just like his dad. He's so fundamentally sound with how he plays the wide receiver position. The way he runs routes, the way he catches everything just right there. He's very reliable. You know he's probably going to be open. Even if he's not quite open, you can still throw it in there and he'll win it. I mean, just like his dad. Everything about him is just technically proficient. And that's the reason why he's the top receiver in this draft class. Because there's not very many guys at that level that are as technically proficient as what we're seeing from Marvin Harrison Jr.
I think he's the top non-quarterback in college football. And you can even make a case that he could be the top player in college football. Certainly the Heisman was seventh in odds at this point.
Right.
He's a game changer. And that was the biggest difference, if you watch that Penn State-Ohio State game, was he changes the game. That's exactly what you want. A guy that's not just a piece, but a guy that's a game changer. That's Marvin Harrison. The biggest difference between Ohio State and Penn State, Ohio State had Marvin Harrison Jr. Penn State did not. Penn State was 1 of 16 on third down. That's why they lost. They could not move the ball. Hey, both defenses are great. Penn State's offense was horrible. Ohio State was different because of Marvin Harrison Jr. That's why he's a special talent. That's why when you talk generational talent, I truly believe Marvin Harrison Jr. will end up being the best pro in this draft.
Then there is a guy who's really kind of climbed up people's boards after he kind of had issues getting eligibility to even play. That being UNC wide receiver Tez Walker.
Now you see why they wanted him so much.
11 catches, 146 yards, and a touchdown for them this past weekend.
But it was in a loss.
It was in a loss. It was a disappointing loss. It was part of I had a parlay that this was a part of. And I was pissed. I was very pissed when UNC lost that game because I was like, oh, they got this. But I will say this, man. Tez, he's showing. He's showing a little bit of something. I don't know if he's a first-round pick because it's a crowded wide receiver class. But, like, I think second day, he could be the one of the steals on the second day.
I think at this point, maybe a second rounder, but incredibly talented transfer player in the North Carolina, and you could see why they wanted him.
I mean, Mac was fighting hard
why
for
coveted.
Him.
I
he was fighting
that,
hard for
I
him
I
would
see
that
a
eligible.
Team fight for a player more than Tez Walker.
I've never seen that much. That man was trying so hard, and we see
I was like,
why
he
now.
Must be something special.
He must be pretty damn good.
Because he came from the Mac.
Yeah. So, I remember hearing about him, and I was like, why is he fighting for this transfer that hard? Oh, we see now. We see now. Then we have UCLA edge rusher Laiatu Latu. Got another sack this past weekend. He's at 6.5 on the season. In the last three games, he's got 2.5. So he's got at least half a sack in his last three games. This guy is building up that consistency that you need at that position. That's a position where a lot of times a guy will get like, and we see it all the time in the NFL, a guy will get like 10 sacks. But, like, he really only had a sack in, like, 7 of his games. And he had, like, a 3-sack performance. And then all the other sacks came in the other games there. And so it's like that is really where you're starting to see him start to accumulate those statistics, consistently generating pressure, consistently getting his hands on the quarterback. That's what you want to see. And that's the reason why I think Dallas Turner is going to be the top edge rusher in this draft class. I think there's a very strong case that Laiatu Latu is going to be number two, though. Above Jerry Verse, even though I know the measurables people really like with Verse. But I look at Latu, and I'm like, okay, this guy, his level of production, the fact that he's the top player on a very good defense at UCLA.
Two good edge rushers there.
Yeah. Like, I think he's going to be a guy that when we're looking at, like, combine season – that's a guy I'm really looking. I think he's going to be like one of the stars of the combine in February.
I always talk about when you watch games, how many times your name mentioned.
Yes.
Do you mention your name quite a bit?
Do you jump off the screen?
And Latu definitely does that. You'll get a chance to watch. It was against Stanford last week. It was a televised game, of course. But this week, it's against Deion Sanders.
Yeah. Against Colorado.
Hey,
we'll talk more about that one later.
Hey, but put it this way. Expect sacks. Yes. Your Sanders get sacked
not
all
a, and,
the day.
And that's not a very good line he's going up against. That's not a good line. Then we're moving on to Illinois defensive tackle, Jerzon Newton, who had a sack this weekend as well. He had 6 tackles in that game as well. He's got 3.5.
Which is a lot for an interior lineman.
He's a defensive tackle with 3.5 sacks at the collegiate level. That's a good number. He has been widely held as the best defensive tackle in this draft class since the very beginning of the year. And he's really showing it, especially for an Illinois team that isn't really that good. Like, this is an Illinois team that's got some talent, But right now, they're not really performing that great. Bielema is having a really tough time there. And I think that Newton is going to be one of those guys probably mid-first, if not in the 20s. And I think whoever he goes to is getting a very, very strong pass-rushing defensive tackle.
One of the best defenses in the country last year, of course, three picks in the top three rounds for Illinois. And they lose the defensive coordinator that year. But Newton has stayed there, and he's continued to put up the numbers.
Then you've got Washington quarterback
Even
Michael.
Even with the team
struggling. I know, right? That team is not playing well at all. Then you've got Washington quarterback Michael Penix Jr. Had a down game this past week. 27 for 42, 275, two interceptions. So not the best performance from Penix. Certainly could be something that you'll see used against him, especially because, again, this was this is a Washington team that is loaded with talent. They've got a lot of really, really good players on that team. And yet they are still – like, this is one of those games where, like, it was low scoring. They struggled to really get in the end zone. And they were able to, you know, grind out a win. But you want to see a guy like him be consistent game in and game out, especially at this level. Because if you start having struggles against good teams and whatnot at this level, what happens when you go play better talent? And the Pac-12 is loaded this year. There's a lot of good teams in that conference, but you still want to see him perform better. You can't have no touchdowns and two picks in a game like this. So definitely disappointing. Then you've got Mr. Consistent, LSU wide receiver Malik Nabers, four catches for 121 yards, two touchdowns. I think it's very clear he's the number two wide receiver in this draft class. I think that question of we've been asking all season long, who's that number two wide receiver? I think it's very clearly Malik Nabers right now. I would not be shocked if he ended up being the best wide receiver from this draft class because of how consistent he is. But, man, like, you just watching him, it's very similar to what I kind of feel with Marvin Harrison Jr. He's just technically proficient, just runs routes very well, catches everything. I mean, every time he whenever they need a play, whenever Jaden Daniels is looking for a playmaker to help move the ball down the field, it's usually Nabers that's that guy. I'm very excited for what he could do at the next
level. He's my second receiver at this point. You talk about Penix. I want to see if he's the second quarterback drafted, but Malik Nabers is my second favorite wide receiver in this year's draft. Now, if Luther Burden was in this year's draft, that would be
He'd be number two, yeah.
Behind Marvin Harrison, but Malik Nabers would be my he's just a playmaker. Just a consummate playmaker every time you watch LSU play. And by the way, they're coming on strong.
They are.
I've liked LSU from the beginning, but they keep getting better and better.
Yeah, that game against Army was them kind of flexing some of their muscles this past weekend. So moving on to moneymakers, guys that performed well this weekend enough to where we can start seeing their draft stock rise. One guy that jumped out to me big time was Oklahoma State running back Ollie Gordon. He was 29. He had 29 carries for 282 yards, four touchdowns. He's not draft eligible. He's a sophomore. So this is a guy that's going to be for next year. But we're talking about someone that is really – and look, what we're seeing from this Oklahoma State team is really interesting because they've been playing a lot of good teams, and they've been playing them very well, very competitively. They've been beating them.
A big part of it.
They were able to go out there and give some teams some scares. I mean, I watched them play against against Kansas State, and they gave them everything they wanted. I mean, I think that we could be talking about a guy next year in Ollie Gordon who could be like a day two guy in the running for one of the top running backs taken in the draft.
Which is difficult for a running back to get to, but you're talking about a guy that's averaging 7 yards a carry. But not only that, Chris, he's got that magical good hands. Teams look for the 17 grabs.
He can catch.
For 180 yards this year as well. But Oklahoma State's an interesting team, and he's been a big part of that resurgence.
Then you've got Washington State wide receiver Lincoln Victor, who had 16 receptions for 161 yards. He's kind of been one of the workhorse guys there for that Washington State Cougars offense. Then
he's not getting a lot of run.
Not getting a ton.
Like as far as the wide receiver, probably a mid-round.
Probably a third-day guy, I think. I think probably a third-day guy.
But great hands.
Great hands, very consistent. I mean, when you are catching 16 passes in a game, I mean, that says a lot about your ability to get open and your ability to make those catches. And that's what teams are going to value right now. Can you run routes? Can you catch? Like, it's cool if you've got the electricity after the catch, but teams right now are focusing on technicians, route technicians. Can you get open? Can you get, especially because a lot of teams now are employing press coverage, even in zone, so they can throw off the timing of these offenses, because you look at like the Dolphins offense, it's all about timing. You know, Tua gets the ball out in like 2.5 seconds. So it's important that you have someone that can get open and can catch. And guys like him, they will have teams interested in their work just because of what they're showing there. Then you've got an edge rusher from Miami in Reuben Bain Jr., who had 2 sacks this past weekend. I always say this about edge rushers. Edge rusher is a position that teams can never have enough. It's like wide receiver. You can never have enough good wide receivers. You can never have enough good edge rushers. So anybody, and I think at this point now, Bain's probably a rotational guy, probably late round guy. But I think that there's value in that. What we've seen here the last few years where teams are taking these guys who are rotational guys and getting good value from them, I think that's where Bain Jr. kind of lies in. Then Troy running back Kimani Vidal, who leads the FBS in rushing yards. This guy right now I think is really interesting because there are some very good running backs in this draft class, but it doesn't really matter where you go to school at for running back.
No, it doesn't at all. I mean, look at Pacheco coming out of Rutgers.
They wouldn't even use their Rutgers. They're bowl eligible
this year, by the way.
I know, right?
They're already bowl eligible.
But they don't get used. He wasn't even used at
school. But Kimani Vidal is a tough, tough, tough runner.
Yeah, and so he had 23 carries for 116 this past week. The week before, he had 245 rushing yards. So this is a guy that is, again, just super consistent. He's getting a lot of work. Obviously, when you see guys who are getting 23 carries, you know, well over 20 carries, you kind of worry about when they're going to break down, because that's a position that's starting to break down a little bit earlier than normal. But that's a guy I could see coming in. Maybe a team has a starting running back, but maybe they're aging. Okay, let's bring in this young workhorse guy that's used to getting a lot of usage, and then we're going to plug him in when we need to, and he's going to be great. And then a guy that you love, you've talked about him a lot, and a guy I'm really starting to get into, LSU wide receiver Brian Thomas Jr., 3 catches for 122, 2 touchdowns this past week. Yeah, it was funny. I was looking at the statistics for FBS leaders and whatnot. I do it every week when I do this segment. He leads the FBS in receiving touchdowns, and he's 10th in yards. And he's not getting much run because he's got Malik Nabers there, who's a better receiver than him, but he's still really damn good. And this is a guy who's just coming out of nowhere. And he's 6'5", just under 200 pounds, like 188 pounds. So you probably want him to add a little bit more weight. Kind of a Marquez Valdez-Scantling body type, if you will. I'll be interested to see what the speed is for him. I think that that 40 time is going to be vital for him this coming year at the Combine. This is a guy that's really starting to come on, man.
And it's good size as well. I just kind of wonder, having Malik Nabers on the other side and having a Jaden Daniels at quarterback,
right,
that's really starting to, for 2 losses, climbing up the Heisman chart to top 5. But I always kind of wonder if it's 2 guys and who's getting the attention, not the other. But Brian Thomas stands out, and getting in the end zone has been the big thing with him. Obviously leads FBS in touchdowns.
Yeah, and so I'm going to be interested, because I wouldn't be shocked if he were to sneak into the first round. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if a team was like, okay, this is the next T. Higgins. Like, we could just go get a big guy who's long, who's athletic, and who is just a great red zone threat. Okay, let's get him. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he, you know, some team late in the first decided to go grab him just because of the T. Higgins story. Because Higgins is a guy that dropped to early second, which he shouldn't have. He was great. He should have been drafted in the first round. Was that the same year that Jalen Reagor got drafted in the first round ahead of Justin Jefferson? I'm pretty sure that was. Was that That was 20, right? He got drafted in 20. Yeah, yeah.
The Jalen Reagor's year.
Yeah, yeah, that was Jalen Reagor's year because Justin Jefferson got drafted that same year. And then he got drafted early in the second round because I remember being like, what the hell are all these other teams
doing? Yeah, he was number two behind Jamar Chase.
Yeah.
But he came back and played that next year when right. Jamar didn't play his last year.
Yeah.
And Justin Jefferson did. 2020 draft, so that was kind of right before the
That was like when the pandemic was in full swing. Yeah, was 2020.
They still had the combine that year. I think it was 2021. Yes. They had the combine.
Yes,
if I was mistaken.
Yeah, but, yeah, it was.
That was the year that Joe Burrow went number one. That's when LSU had the 14
draft. That was the basement
picks.
Draft. That was the Goodell's basement draft.
Yeah, Jalen Reagor went 21st to the Eagles. Justin Jefferson went 22,
which was ridiculous.
Yeah, 21.
I couldn't believe that Jalen Reagor went that high. It's ridiculous. So moving on to our watch list, gonna start. Florida State, Wake Forest, we've said this before, Johnny Wilson Jr., Keon Coleman, those are the two guys right there. You got to watch those guys. I've been very adamant about Keon Coleman. Johnny Wilson Jr. is cool. He's 6'7", good possession style receiver.
But Keon returns. He's big.
He's big, but he's fast and he's agile. He doesn't play like he's 6'4". He plays like he's 5'11", 6'. He plays like he is a gadget player with the speed and agility. Like, I think, and I've been saying this a lot about a lot of guys, Keon Coleman might be the most talented receiver in this draft.
And we're sitting here, and again, this is where the Chiefs, they're sitting at the end of the first round. There's going to be a plentiful amount of wide receiver talent that's big, fast, physical, sitting there for the Kansas City Chiefs. It's not going to be like last year. We had this big stretch. Okay, we take Quentin Johnson in the first round like the Chargers did.
Yeah.
Because there was like 3-4 guys, sorry, they're first rounders. Not this year.
No.
You can make an argument that second rounders would be first rounders this year. It's going to be all who you like the best.
Yeah, and there's not going to be is Zay Flowers a first round receiver? No, there's going to be none. Like, there's none of that. Like, this year it's going to be, I cannot believe that receiver was taken in the second round. There's going to be that. There's going to be like, that guy's so good, how did he not go in the first? Like, I guarantee you that's what it's going to be for probably at least 2 or 3 of those guys that are taken on the second or third, on the second day there. Also, Jared Verse, edge rusher for Florida State, because he was the highest touted edge rusher in the draft class. Also, tight end Jaheim Bell. I actually, in my mock draft, I did that mock draft earlier on my own. Jaheim Bell. I was able to get him in the 4th round.
Pass catching tight end. Like all the different ways they use Jaheim Bell. He's fun to watch.
Yeah. Indiana taking on number 10 Penn State. Tackle Olu Fashanu, who's widely considered one of, if not the best, left tackle in this draft class. I don't think he's going to be in play for the Chiefs. I think he's probably going to go top 10. There's some very, very tackle needy teams out there that could use a guy like him. Edge rusher Chop Robinson. I know he got hurt Ohio State. Do we have any follow-up on his injury there?
I don't know what they said with Chop, but it wasn't good.
Because it didn't look good.
He went to the medical tent and limped off of it.
And they carted him back to the locker room. Like, it didn't look good. Like, I remember watching him be like, oh, no, that's not good for Chop. And Chop was a guy that I've seen as a potential first-round edge rusher. So, if he does end up playing, obviously good for his draft stock. Him getting hurt, though, it could affect him. I haven't heard his name called nearly as much this year as far as like top edge rushers go in terms of performance. But that's a guy that you look at the talent, you watch him on film, you're like, okay, this guy's got something. He could be something at this level.
But he's the heart and soul of that Penn State defense, which is a top 3 defense.
And they got a good corner as well in Kalen King. Didn't have the greatest game when you're going up against a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. But Kalen King, another guy he was kind of the second guy to Joey Porter Jr. last year, but very talented corner. Then you got Houston taking on K-State, a game that I will be in attendance for. And you've got tight end Ben Sinnott, who last week, with the whole two quarterback situation, I'm kind of concerned he's not going to get the kind of usage that he was getting before. I mean, didn't have a catch at all this week. The week before, he had 6 catches for 72, I think it was, or 76.
We still don't know his 100% status this week either.
I know. And so you're kind of concerned about that. You don't want those injuries to creep up. And then obviously guard Cooper Beebe.
Yeah, he's solid.
It's funny.
I made 346 yards rushing this past week.
On my mock draft, I was able to get Cooper in the 5th.
Were you?
Yeah. In the fifth. I don't think he's going to be available in the fifth.
Maybe he's a first round.
I think he's probably going to be first or second rounder. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, no, Cooper, I was looking at that. I was like, bro, this mock draft don't know what it's doing. If you think Cooper's going to be there in the fifth. So that was a guy I was looking at. Clemson taking on North Carolina State. We've got Barrett Carter, linebacker for Clemson. Also got Nate Wiggins as well. Clemson is not – they're young. They're probably a next-year team. Obviously, you got to worry about, like, transfers because Clemson doesn't take transfers. Just so stupid.
Close loss.
Yeah. But Clemson's got some talent.
But Nate Wiggins, the cornerback's fun to watch, and Barrett Carter, that linebacker. I love watching these kids play.
Yeah. Then you got the world's largest cocktail party. You've got Georgia taking on Florida. Brock Bowers, we don't know anything about his timetable. I think they said 4 to 6 weeks, something like that.
So, what I call that surgery, for the high ankle sprain.
I don't know what it was called.
Oh, it's sidestep or what do they call it?
Something. But, like, it was basically it, because he had a high ankle sprain, and basically the surgery was made to help alleviate symptoms.
Yeah, to get back faster.
Get back faster.
Because Amarius Mims had a tightrope surgery.
Right.
Because Mims, one of the outstanding tackles they have, had the surgery as well.
And Mims is a guy who many thought could be a first-round tackle in this coming draft. He's a very good right tackle. No Brock Bowers this week. Probably done until the SEC championship game at the earliest. So, no, he's not going to be in there. But there's a couple of guys on that Georgia defense that are interesting. One being cornerback Kamari Lassiter, and the other being safety Javon Bullard. Then
hybrid role where he actually slid into the nickel as well. Right. So
then there's another guy that's really I think he's probably a third day guy, but a guy that I think has really started to stand out a lot. That's Florida wide receiver Ricky Pearsall. Pearsall was originally an Arizona State transfer. He transferred when the whole everything kind of fell out with Antonio Pierce at Arizona State and Herm Edwards, and they got in trouble. Pearsall has been very solid. He's almost matched his output from 2022 this year. He's over 600 yards already, 44 catches. The thing that's interesting about him, though, is he's starting to develop his route running. He's becoming a very consistent wide receiver. Probably not going to be a high round pick guy, but I think if you're looking at a third day guy who could be a good third or fourth option on a team next year, Pearsall's the guy. I think Pearsall could be a Puka Nakua type player in the draft.
Will anybody slip and not pick him? Man.
Yeah, I think
not the fastest, is he the best?
That's what I'm saying. He's like, he's just very fundamentally sound and he gets the job done. I think he could be a Puka Nakua type guy. BYU takes on Texas. Xavier Worthy, a guy that you really like being at wide receiver.
I like their whole receiving core.
Yeah, the receiving core is good. AD Mitchell's another guy, too.
And their tight end, Jatavion Sanders.
Do we know if Sanders is going to be good to go with the ankle?
Quinn Ewers is going to miss some games,
because Quinn Ewers is going to be out with an injury. Didn't they say it was like 4 games he's going
to
be out?
Yeah, so Quinn Ewers, the injury's starting to mount up, but that offense, the skill position, is something to watch for Texas.
Yeah, and so obviously, you know, Jonathan Brooks is going to be he's my favorite running back from this draft class. I just love the way he runs. Those Texas running backs, they run hard. They're very physical. I like how Jonathan Brooks plays. So
Jalen Catalon, the safety, and that's one to watch as well.
Yeah, Catalon as well. And then you also have both of their defensive tackles, that being Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy the second. Then you've got Pitt taking on Notre Dame, San Hartman, Joe Alt, Blake Fisher, and Autric Estime on their offense. Those are guys to watch. Autric, I think, has a very good case to be the top running back taken in this draft class. Duke taking on Louisville. Do we know, like, is Riley Leonard back to 100%?
That's the question, because this is the second game he's been banged up in, so we're not sure on that, where he sits.
There's a lot of question marks about him, but he's also another potential first-round quarterback that could be available there, and that could help the Chiefs, because that's one less potential wide
receiver. I think he's a first-rounder.
I think there's a good chance, too.
Untalked about first-rounder.
The way that, I think after the Clemson game, I think he really kind of put himself up there, and certainly the way that they have played here this year, where they're competitive against the top teams, good chance there. Virginia takes on Miami. You got Zion Nelson, Francis Maui Goa, Safety James Williams, quarterback Tyler Van Dyke as well. Miami's got some talent.
It's all Miami, even though Virginia with the big upset last week. That's all. Miami's got a ton of talent.
Yeah.
They just make dumb.
You know, what's funny is like they generally have a lot of they've had a lot of talent since when Mark Richt was there.
That's why they led. I think they led college football no money last year.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. They've been passing out money for a long time now, but
they're back to getting pro prospects all the time.
Yes, they are. USC takes on Cal. USC is ranked 24th right now, so they're very very quickly free falling down the rankings there. Caleb Williams, obviously, that's the guy to watch for as the draft goes. Then you got wide receiver Brendan Rice, Taj Washington,
who's really starting to climb. Like that's really the untalked about, but probably the he is the best receiver at USC right now.
Yeah. And then there was Mario Washington and Dorian Singer. Singer was originally thought to be the top receiver at USC going into the season.
Mario Williams is those two.
Yeah, and like I don't feel like any of those receivers are great. I just think they're pretty good. Like probably a couple of those guys will probably play in the league for a little bit. But I don't feel like any of those guys are, like, great receivers. So, but certainly you want to watch. Maybe they break out. Maybe I'm wrong and, like, one or two of them breaks out. But certainly you got to look out for Caleb Williams as well. Washington takes on Stanford. That's the regular crew on their offense with Michael Penix Jr., Roma Dunze, Jalen McMillan, and Jalen Polk. But also, and I talked about this last week, that that Eligio Menor, wide receiver for Stanford, not draft eligible. He's
two monster
a sophomore.
Games he's put together.
But he's put together two monster games, and this is a kid we're going to be talking about next year.
Him and Luther.
Him and probably not going to be up there with Luther. He's probably like maybe number two or number three. But this is a guy you could be looking at for the draft next year in the first round, maybe second round. But this is a guy I think could very well play. He's right now he's playing himself into the NFL.
Roma Dunze, just a playmaker. I mean, just fun to watch. But the Jalen Polk, man, as we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, that's a receiver that's really, I think, starting to gain maybe some first-round attention.
Yeah, it's very possible. I think probably still second day. But if he can really put together some monster performances down the stretch for Washington, that's a guy I think scouts are really going to be looking at for first day. Ohio State takes on Wisconsin. That's the regular crew. Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Egbuka. Your defensive tackles, Tyleek Williams and Michael Hall Jr. Again, you know, a lot of this is contingent on whether or not Veach is going to break his covenant and actually take an Ohio State player because he's never done it as the GM for the Chiefs. You also have the edge rushers, Tui Maluau and Sawyer. Denzel Burke.
Yeah, kind of a top 3 to 5 corner. I like his 6'1", 190.
Yeah, good size, 6'1", 190. And you like that size. I think the league is starting to trend towards the bigger corners. It used to be, hey, we like the smaller guys because of the speed and the ability to play the ball. But now teams, especially because of the tackling aspect, teams are starting to get away from those smaller corners, and they want the bigger, more physical guys who can play press coverage, but can also come up and tackle running backs and receivers in the flat. So a guy like him, that size, that ability to hit, he's going to have value there. Colorado, as we mentioned earlier, Colorado takes on number 23 UCLA. Shedeur Sanders, Xavier Weaver, Travis Hunter for Colorado, though Travis Hunter's not draft eligible this year.
And we talked a lot last week on whether he should pick one side or the other. He was good at both, but the defensive back skills are starting to slip from him.
Yeah, it's starting to slip.
But Latu, your guy, is someone I'm watching this game. Because Shedeur takes a ton of sacks.
Yes, he gets hit a lot. He's got terrible – both the –
Latu, two sacks this game. I'll go ahead and put it over under two.
I actually think you're onto something there.
Latu, two sacks this game.
I think you're onto something. Latu's going to eat, man. He's going to eat against this offensive line. Oh. Colorado's terrible on both sides of the line there. I think Latu's going to have a really nice game.
The Latu game.
Yeah, I think Shedeur Sanders is going to learn a lot about Latu here coming on Saturday. And then also a guy that you were talking to me a lot about this guy before. I remember seeing stuff about him before the draft. Wide receiver for UCLA, J. Michael Sturdivant.
Good size, but explosive speed. Just one of those down the field type of receivers. A guy probably you can get in second, third round at this point. Who knows when he gets the combine?
Sounds like a Chiefs type.
When he goes out and runs like a 4.35,
yeah, sounds like a Chiefs receiver.
At that size, right, you're going to see a lot more people like him. Yeah, he does. But the funny thing about him is he went to Flowery Mound, Texas. That's where he was track and field.
Yeah, yeah.
And Floyd Little, he's his nephew. So mm-hmm. he's got the lineage, pro football lineage
right.
in his background. The interesting thing about him, he actually spent his first, one or two years at Blue Valley Northwest. So, little known fact about J. Michael Sturdivant.
Kind of a local kid. And then you've got Old Dominion taking on number 25, James Madison. Why are we talking about Old Dominion? Because they got one of the best linebackers, maybe the best linebacker in this draft class, in Jason Henderson. Guy that I talked about a lot on he was one of my playmakers last week. Guy just makes tackles. He makes tackle for losses. He gets after the quarterback. I mean, this guy just does everything. And I mean, I don't think he's a first round pick because linebacker generally, unless you're an edge rusher, linebacker is not a position that's going to be taken there. Usually teams are going to go second day there to get their value. But this is a guy that could be a second-day steal for a team.
It's the problem with us is we find guys and hitch your wagon to them in the draft.
Yeah. Yeah, that is what we do out here. And then finally.
Like
Luke-y. Yeah, we did. We did talk a lot about Luke-y. I don't think I'm gonna mock Henderson to the
Henderson's going to be your guy. I can smell it now.
No, I'm not going to do that. And then finally, Oregon State takes on Arizona. Oregon State, number 11 in the country. Big guy to watch for is their quarterback, DJ Uiagalelei. And then they've got an offensive tackle, two offensive tackles, actually, that are really starting to – you wrote this down in a rundown, and you wrote the pronunciation. You got to say it.
What's that? Talisa Fuaga. He's 6'5", 334 pounds. It's the right tackle. But their left tackle, Joshua Gray, getting a lot of run, too. We're talking.
You didn't have any problem with the second.
Probably top two of the top 20 tackles in the country. Talessa gets a lot more looks at Fuaga gets a lot more looks at, but he's the right tackle. But he's a mountain of a man, 6'6", 334. But if you're interested in linemen, again, we talk about Wanye Morris and slipping in. Will the Chiefs go tackle or not? But like Notre Dame, when you watch both the tackles, or when you watch Miami and watch that offensive line, Oregon State's an extremely physical football team, and it starts up front with their offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. Like, I'm kind of leaning now towards the Chiefs not going tackle early. Maybe they go depth with tackle on the third day. We've seen them do that before, obviously, like Darian Kennard. But I do think that I wouldn't be shocked if the Chiefs went tackle. But I kind of think now that that's off. Unless it's like Wanye's just not made for it. If he's not made for it, then he's not going to do it. But I think right now, I think because they've shown some confidence in him, I think it's probably they're going to give him a shot. So left tackle probably out of play. But again, would not be shocked if third day they decide, hey, we like this guy. He's got great measurables. We got to coach him up. And I've said this before. I have never seen a team that trusts their ability to coach more than the Kansas City Chiefs. So I wouldn't be shocked if you saw one of these guys here, Fuaga or Gray, end up being the one of the picks there.
Yeah, if you like watching offensive line play, Oregon State's a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
The 11th in the country, but watch both bookend tackles. The right tackle I actually like more. I like Fuaga more because he's just 6'6", 334. He's a mountain of a man.
Oh, yeah.
And he can move.
And you know Andy loves guys like that who are mountainous.
He's a mountain, and he can move, and he's tough
and
to get around.
He loves guys who can move. He loves that mobility. He loves the strength and the length. Oh, man. So, yeah, he's definitely an Andy type of guy. So with that, we are done with this week's edition of the Character Concerns podcast. Make sure that you subscribe. Make sure that you share it with your friends. Make sure that you give it 5 stars on whatever platform you use it on, and probably go to the other platforms and give it 5 stars, too. We appreciate that. Make sure you get your downloads in, all of that. We appreciate the people who take time out of their week to listen to us. We're now getting down close to that home stretch. We're almost to November now, which is that final third of the regular season for college football. And then after that, you've got conference championship games, and then we got bowl season after that. Certainly once we get to bowl season, we'll probably start doing some mock drafts. We'll start looking at other mock drafts, and we're really going to start hitting at where we think the Chiefs are going to be focusing on in the draft. because I think we're starting to get some more clear answers as to where they're not going to go, especially with the way that the season has unfolded. So, for Jay Binkley?
We need some character concerns. It's mock draft season.
Yeah, I actually think that'd be a great idea.
Mock draft season. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm about it. So, for Jay Binkley, I'm Christian Osero. We'll catch you guys next week.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas. This is sports the way it should be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake Forest, you know, we've said this before, Johnny Wilson Jr., Keon Coleman, those are the two guys right there. You got to watch those guys. I've been very adamant about Keon Coleman. Johnny Wilson Jr. is cool. He's 6'7", you know, good possession style receiver.
But Keon returns. Keon, he's big.
He's big, but he's fast and he's agile. He doesn't play like he's 6'4". He plays like he's 5'11", 6'. He plays like he is a gadget player with the speed and agility. Like, I think, and I've been saying this a lot about a lot of guys, Keon Coleman might be the most talented receiver in this draft.
And we're sitting here, and again, this is where the Chiefs are sitting at the end of the first round. There's going to be a plentiful amount of wide receiver talent that's big, fast, physical, sitting there for the Kansas City Chiefs. It's not going to be like last year. We had this big stretch. Okay, do we take Quentin Johnson in the first round like the Chargers did?
Yeah.
Because there was like 3-4 guys, sorry, they're first rounders. Not this year.
No.
You can make an argument that second rounders would be first rounders this year. It's going to be all who you like the best.
Yeah, and there's not going to be is Zay Flowers a first round receiver? No, there's going to be none. Like, there's none of that. Like, this year it's going to be, I cannot believe that receiver was taken in the second round. There's going to be that. There's going to be like, that guy's so good, how did he not go in the first? Like, I guarantee you that's what it's going to be for probably at least 2 or 3 of those guys that are taken on the second or third, on the second day there. Also, Jared Verse, edge rusher for Florida State, because he was the highest touted edge rusher in the draft class. Also, tight end Jaheim Bell. I actually, in my mock draft, or I did that mock draft earlier on my own, Jaheim Bell.
So my guys,
I was able to get him in the fourth round.
You know, pass catching tight end. And it's like all the different ways they use Jaheim Bell. He's fun to watch.
Yeah. Indiana taking on number 10 Penn State. Tackle Olu Fashanu, who's widely considered one of, if not the best, left tackle in this draft class. I don't think he's going to be in play for the Chiefs. I think he's probably going to go top 10. There's some very, very tackle needy teams out there that could use a guy like him. Edge rusher Chop Robinson. I know he got hurt in that game against Ohio State. Do we have any follow-up on his injury there?
I don't know what they said with Chop, but it wasn't good.
Because it didn't look good.
He went to the medical tent and limped off of it.
And they carted him back to the locker room. Like, it didn't look good. Like, I remember watching him be like, oh, no, that's not good for Chop. And Chop was a guy that I've seen as a potential first-round edge rusher. So if he does end up playing, obviously good for his draft stock. Him getting hurt, though, it could affect him. I haven't heard his name called nearly as much this year as far as like top edge rushers go in terms of performance. But that's a guy that you look at the talent, you watch him on film, you're like, okay, this guy's got something. He could be something at this level.
But he's the heart and soul of that Penn State defense, is a top three defense.
And they got a good corner as well in Kalen King. Didn't have the greatest game when you're going up against a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. But Kalen King, another guy he was kind of the second guy to Joey Porter Jr. last year, but very talented corner. Then you got Houston taking on K-State, a game that I will be in attendance for. And you've got tight end Ben Sinnott, who last week, with the whole two-quarterback situation, I'm kind of concerned he's not going to get the kind of usage that he was getting before. I mean, didn't have a catch at all this week. The week before, he had 6 catches for 72, I think it was, or 76.
We still don't know his 100% status this week either.
I know. And so you're kind of concerned about that. You don't want those injuries to creep up. And then, obviously, guard Cooper Beebe.
Yeah, he's solid.
It's funny.
They had 346 yards rushing this past week.
On my mock draft, I was able to get Cooper in the 5th.
Were you?
In the 5th. Oh, I don't think he's going to be available in the 5th.
Maybe he's a first rounder.
I think he's probably going to be first or second rounder. Yeah. But, yeah, no, Cooper, I was looking at that. I was like, bro, this mock draft don't know what it's doing. If you think Cooper's going to be there in the 5th. So that was a guy I was looking at. Clemson taking on North Carolina State. We've got Barrett Carter, linebacker for Clemson. Also got Nate Wiggins as well. Clemson is not – they're young. They're probably a next-year team. Obviously, you got to worry about, like, transfers because Clemson doesn't take transfers. Just so stupid.
Close loss.
Yeah. But Clemson's got some talent.
But Nate Wiggins, the cornerback's fun to watch, and Barrett Carter, that linebacker. I love watching these kids play.
Yeah. Then you got the world's largest cocktail party. You've got Georgia taking on Florida. Brock Bowers, we don't know anything about his timetable. I think they said 4 to 6 weeks, something like that.
So, what I call that surgery, for the high ankle sprain.
I don't know what it was called.
Oh, it's sidestep or what do they call it?
Something. But like it was basically because he had a high ankle sprain and basically the surgery was made to help alleviate symptoms.
Yeah, to get back faster. Because Amarius Mims had a tightrope surgery.
Right.
Because Mims, one of the outstanding tackles they have, had the surgery
and,
as well.
And Mims is a guy who many thought could be a first round tackle in this coming draft. He's a very good right tackle. No Brock Bowers this week, probably done until the SEC championship game at the earliest. So, no, he's not going to be in there. But there's a couple of guys on that Georgia defense that are interesting, one being cornerback Kamari Lassiter and the other being safety Javon Bullard. Then
– hybrid role where he actually slid in the nickel as well. Right. So
then there's another guy that's really – I think he's probably a third-day guy. But a guy that I think has really started to stand out a lot, that's Florida wide receiver Ricky Pearsall. Pearsall was originally an Arizona State transfer. He transferred when the whole everything kind of fell out with Antonio Pierce at Arizona State and Herm Edwards, and they got in trouble. Pearsall has been very solid. He's almost matched his output from 2022 this year. He's over 600 yards already, 44 catches. The thing that's interesting about him, though, is he's starting to develop his route running. He's becoming a very consistent wide receiver. Probably not going to be a high-round pick guy, but I think if you're looking at a third-day guy who could be a good third or fourth option on a team next year, Pearsall's the guy. I think Pearsall could be he could end up being a Puka Nakua-type player in the draft.
Will anybody slip and not pick him? Man.
Yeah, I think
not the fastest, but man, is he the best.
That's what I'm saying. He's just very fundamentally sound, and he gets the job done. I think he could be a Puka Nakua type guy. BYU takes on Texas. Xavier Worthy, a guy that you really like being at wide receiver.
I like their whole receiving core.
Yeah, their receiving core is good. A.D. Mitchell's another guy, too.
And their tight end, Jatavion Sanders.
Do we know if Sanders is going to be good to go with the ankle?
Quinn Ewers is going to miss some games, too.
Because Quinn Ewers is going to be out with an injury. Didn't they say it was like four games he's going
to
be out?
Yeah, so Quinn Ewers, the injury's starting to mount up, but that offense, the skill position is something to watch for Texas.
Yeah, and so obviously, you know, Jonathan Brooks is going to be he's my favorite running back from this draft class. I just love the way he runs. Those Texas running backs, they run hard. They're very physical. I like how Jonathan Brooks plays. So,
Jalen Catalon, the safety, and that's one to watch as well.
Yeah, Catalon as well. And then you also have both of their defensive tackles, that being Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy the second. Then you've got Pitt taking on Notre Dame, San Hartman, Joe Alt, Blake Fisher, and Autryk Estime on their offense. Those are guys to watch. Autryk, I think, has a very good case to be the top running back taken in this draft class. Duke taking on Louisville. Do we know, like, is Riley Leonard back to 100%
there? That's the question, because this is the second game he's been banged up in, so we're not sure on that, where he sits.
There's a lot of question marks about him, but he's also another potential first-round quarterback that could be available there, and that could help the Chiefs, because that's one less potential wide receiver.
I think he's a
first-rounder. I think there's a good chance, too.
Untalked about first-rounder.
The way that, I think after the Clemson game, I think he really kind of put himself up there, and certainly the way that they have played here this year, where they're competitive against the top teams, good chance there. Virginia takes on Miami. You got Zion Nelson, Francis Maui-Goa, safety James Williams, quarterback Tyler Van Dyke as well. Miami's got some talent.
It's all Miami, even though Virginia with the big upset last week. That's all. Miami's got a ton of talent.
Yeah.
They just make dumb.
You know what's funny is like they generally have a lot of they've had a lot of talent since when Mark Richt was there.
That's why they led. I think they led college football no money last year.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. They've been passing out money for a long time now, but
they're back to getting pro prospects all the time.
Yes, they are. USC takes on Cal. USC is ranked 24th right now, so they're very very quickly free falling down the rankings there. Caleb Williams, obviously, that's the guy to watch for as the draft goes. Then you got wide receiver Brendan Rice, Taj Washington,
who's really starting to climb. Like, that's really the untalked about, but probably the best. Well, he is the best receiver at USC right now.
Yeah. And then there was Mario Washington and Dorian Singer. Singer was originally thought to be the top receiver at USC going into the season.
Mario Williams is those two.
Yeah. And like, I don't feel like any of those receivers are great. I just think they're pretty good. Like, probably a couple of those guys will probably play in the league for a little bit. But I don't feel like any of those guys are, like, great receivers. So, but certainly you want to watch. Maybe they break out. Maybe I'm wrong and, like, one or two of them breaks out. But certainly you got to look out for Caleb Williams as well. Washington takes on Stanford. That's the regular crew on their offense with Michael Penix Jr., Roma Dunze, Jalen McMillan, and Jalen Polk. But also, and I talked about this last week, that Eligio Menor, wide receiver for Stanford, not draft eligible. He's
two monster
a sophomore.
Games he's put together.
But he's put together two monster games, and this is a kid we're going to be talking about next year.
Him and Luther.
Him and probably not going to be up there with Luther. He's probably like maybe number two or number three. But this is a guy you could be looking at for the draft next year in the first round, maybe second round. But this is a guy I think could very well play. He's right now he's playing himself into the NFL.
Roma Dunze, just a playmaker. I mean, just fun to watch. But the Jalen Polk, man, as we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, that's a receiver that's really, I think, starting to gain maybe some first round attention.
Yeah, it's very possible. I think probably still second day, but if he can really put together some monster performances down the stretch for Washington, that's a guy I think scouts are really going to be looking at for first day. Ohio State takes on Wisconsin. That's the regular crew. Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Egbuka. Your defensive tackles, Tyleek Williams and Michael Hall Jr. Again, you know, a lot of this is contingent on whether or not Veach is going to break his covenant and actually take an Ohio State player, because he's never done it as the GM for the Chiefs. You also have the edge rushers, Tui Maluau and Sawyer. Denzel Burke.
Yeah, kind of a top 3 to 5 corner. I like his 6'1", 190.
Yeah, good size, 6'1", 190. And you like that size. I think the league is starting to trend towards the bigger corners. It used to be, hey, we like the smaller guys because of the speed and the ability to play the ball. But now teams, especially because of the tackling aspect, teams are starting to get away from those smaller corners, and they want the bigger, more physical guys who can play press coverage but can also come up and tackle running backs and receivers in the flat. So a guy like him, that size, that ability to hit, yeah, he's going to have value there. Colorado, as we mentioned earlier, Colorado takes on number 23 UCLA. Shedeur Sanders, Xavier Weaver, Travis Hunter for Colorado, though Travis Hunter's not draft eligible this year.
And we talked a lot last week on whether he should pick one side or the other. He was good at both, but the defensive back skills are starting to slip from
him. It's starting to slip.
But Latu, your guy, is someone I'm watching this game. Because Shedeur takes a ton of sacks.
Yes, he gets hit a lot. He's got terrible – both the –
Latu, two sacks this game. I'll go ahead and put it over at two.
I actually think you're onto something there.
Latu, two sacks this game.
Yeah. I think you're onto something. Latu's going to eat, man. He's going to eat against this offensive line. Oh. Colorado's terrible on both sides of the line there. I think Latu's going to have a really nice game.
The Latu game.
Yeah, I think Shedeur Sanders is going to learn a lot about Latu here coming on Saturday. And then also a guy that you were talking to me a lot about this guy before. I remember seeing stuff about him before the draft. Wide receiver for UCLA, J. Michael Sturdivant.
Good size, but explosive speed. Just one of those down the field type of receivers. A guy probably you can get in second, third round at this point. Who knows when he gets to the combine?
Sounds like a Chiefs type.
When he goes out and runs like a 4.35,
sounds like a Chiefs receiver.
At that size, you're going to see a lot more people like him. He does. But the funny thing about him is he went to Flowery Mound, Texas. That's where he was track and field. And Floyd Little, he's his nephew. So he's got the lineage, pro football lineage in his background. The interesting thing about him, he actually spent his first, one or two years at Blue Valley Northwest. So, little known fact about J. Michael Sturdivant.
Kind of a local kid. And then you've got Old Dominion taking on number 25, James Madison. Why are we talking about Old Dominion? Because they got one of the best linebackers, maybe the best linebacker in this draft class, in Jason Henderson. Guy that I talked about a lot. He was one of my playmakers last week. Guy just makes tackles. He makes tackle for losses. He gets after the quarterback. I mean, this guy just does everything. And, I mean, I don't think he's a first-round pick because linebacker generally, unless you're an edge rusher, linebacker is not a position that's going to be taken there. Usually teams are going to go second day there to get their value. But this is a guy that could be a second-day steal for a team.
It's the problem with us is we find guys and hitch your wagon to them in the draft.
that is what we do out here. And then finally
like –
We did talk a lot about Lukey. I don't think I'm gonna mock Henderson to the
Henderson's going to be your guy. I can smell it now.
No, I'm not going to do that. And then finally, Oregon State takes on Arizona. Oregon State, number 11 in the country. Big guy to watch for is their quarterback, DJ Uiagalelei. And then they've got two offensive tackles, actually, that are really starting to – you wrote this down on a rundown, and you wrote the pronunciation. You got to say it.
What's that? Talisa Fuaga. He's 6'5", 334 pounds. It's the right tackle. But their left tackle, Joshua Gray, getting a lot of run, too. We're talking.
You didn't have any problem with the second
probably
one.
Probably two of the top 20 tackles in the country. Talisa gets a lot more looks at Fuaga. Gets a lot more looks at. But he's the right tackle. But he's a mountain of a man, 6'6", 334. But if you're interested in linemen, again, we talk about Wanye Morris and slipping in. Will the Chiefs go tackle or not? But like Notre Dame, when you watch both the tackles or when you watch Miami and watch that offensive line, Oregon State's an extremely physical football team, and it starts up front with their offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. Like, I'm kind of leaning now towards the Chiefs not going tackle early. Maybe they go depth with tackle on the third day. We've seen them do that before, obviously, like Darian Kennard. But I do think that I wouldn't be shocked if the Chiefs went tackle, but I kind of think now that that's off unless it's like Wanye's just not made for it. If he's not made for it, then he's not going to do it. But I think right now, I think because they've shown some confidence in him, I think it's probably they're going to give him a shot. So left tackle probably out of play, but again, would not be shocked if third day they decide, hey, we like this guy, he's got great measurables, we got to coach him up. And I've said this before, I have never seen a team that trusts their ability to coach more than the Kansas City Chiefs. So I wouldn't be shocked if you saw one of these guys, Air Fuaga or Gray, end up being the one of the picks there.
Yeah, if you like watching offensive line play, Oregon State's a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
The 11th in the country, but watch both bookend tackles. The right tackle I actually like more. I like Fuaga more because he's just 6'6", 334. He's a mountain of a man.
Oh, yeah.
And he can move.
And you know Andy loves guys like that who are mountainous.
He's a mountain, and he can move, and he's tough to get around.
He loves guys who can move. He loves that mobility. He loves the strength and the length. Oh, man. So, yeah, he's definitely an Andy type of guy. So with that, we are done with this week's edition of the Character Concerns podcast. Make sure that you subscribe. Make sure that you share it with your friends. Make sure that you give it 5 stars on whatever platform you use it on, and probably go to the other platforms and give it 5 stars too. We appreciate that. Make sure you get your downloads in, all of that. We appreciate the people who take time out of their week to listen to us. We're now getting down close to that home stretch. We're almost to November now, which is that final third of the regular season for college football. And then after that, you've got conference championship games, and then we got bowl season after that. Certainly, once we get to bowl season, we'll probably start doing some mock drafts. We'll start looking at other mock drafts, and we're really going to start hitting at where we think the Chiefs are going to be focusing on in the draft, because I think we're starting to get some more clear answers as to where they're not going to go, especially with the way that the season has unfolded. So, for Jay Binkley,
we need some character concerns. It's mock draft season.
Yeah, I actually think that'd be a great idea.
Mock draft season. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm about it. So for Jay Binkley, I'm Christian Osero. We'll catch you guys next week.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, 3-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.